Geraint Wyn Davies is a Welsh-Canadian actor who has starred in numerous plays, movies, and television shows since his debut in 1977. We met Mr. Davies in September of 2023 and completely lost our minds. After we came to, we had one goal in mind: watch everything he has ever been in so that next time we're ready. How has this man made a career out of making out on screen? Will this be enough to help us make it through the next meeting, still conscious? This isn't a podcast. It's an inoculation. Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Meg. And this is Gare Can Get It. This week, we make out with Jaws. Alternately, I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. Davies.
They gave awards for makeouts on screen or stage. This guy would get a lifetime achievement. He'll find any excuse to get right to suck and face. You honestly wouldn't believe it. Dissecting each and every kiss with tongue. There's only one conclusion to come to. It's that Gare can get it.
No, they're good. That was good. I liked it. Yeah, it pretty much summed up the entire episode of Street Legal.
I mean, that is true. We probably don't need to do it. That could be the whole, that should be this whole week is just, he makes out with a lady. She's a lawyer. All right, see you guys next week. Just like end the episode. Okay, so this week we are discussing the original TV series of Street Legal, not the 2019 remake. So this is the one from 1987. I think it's about as old as I am. So I think 87.
Yeah, you can tell because the main actor that we're supposed to think is attractive looks like a troll. Like,
I mean, okay, so I'm going to, we need to discuss him. We need, because okay. I looked up his age because I was really upset by it. And I thought maybe it was one of those things where like an actor is like 50 and he's like, no, I can play 30. But
no,
the early 90s were a different time. But okay, so we are discussing the original Street Legal. We are discussing season 4, episode 14, The Wedding. It's from January 1990, and Gare plays a character called Anthony Davis. Not Davies, Davis.
Davis, yes.
Davis. Okay. And like, legal shows, I always have a hard time watching them. I'm just going to admit that right now. I have a hard time because either they're too true to life and they start giving me sweaty palms, which is why I can't watch The Paper Chase. I have tried fully 4 times to watch The Paper Chase movie. I cannot get, there's like the first 10 minutes of the movie where they're like at the law school and they're in their seats and the teacher is asking them questions, like doing the Socratic method. No joke, I start sweating from my palms and I like, my mouth gets dry and I can't, like it's PTSD. I cannot.
You have a panic attack.
I do. Yeah. I do. I have tried. And like, I like Edward Harriman. And like, I'm just going to say young Edward Harriman is not to be slept on. Like, there is something very sexy about young Edward Harriman and like the glasses and the hair. Like, I am into it. Even with that, I cannot. Like, have you ever seen a picture of him when he's young?
I'm about to.
Please do. Please do. Because it is. Look him up in Paper Chase because he is like 20s, like late 20s. Oh my God. A specimen. He was so handsome. I cannot get through The Paper Chase. It makes me like, it makes my stomach hurt. It makes me so upset. So like, if it's too true to life, I can't watch a legal program. But I'm finding that like a lot of modern legal shows just goes too far the other way, where it's such crazy off the wall bullshit that makes no sense at all, that it makes me angry. Okay. Did you
look
him up?
The Master Vampire from The Lost Boys?
Okay. First off, that is not his shining moment. Although I will say that the night, like the, was it the 80s glasses that he has? Like, I like yeah, him before they put on the weird Frankenstein green makeup they put on him, which everyone else got to be hot in that movie.
Oh, he just looks sweet.
He does look sweet.
He has a sweet face. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Young Edward Harriman is very kissable. Like, I am into it, but I cannot watch him in The Paper Chase because it hurts my tummy. It makes me very upset. I have a lot of law school trauma and it comes out watching The Paper Chase. But like, so I feel like, so half the legal programs, not even half, like 10% of legal programs, if they're like super accurate like that, it hurts my tum-tum. But then the other 90%, I feel like, are just like beautiful people in beautiful clothes saying the stupidest goddamn shit I've ever heard in my whole fucking life. And that just makes me like angry because I'm like, that's not how any of this works. Those words don't mean what you think they mean. Like, it just like it makes me like viscerally angry. So like Street Legal, at least based on this one episode, made me viscerally angry. So I'm going to try and get through it. But like, it's not, if you're looking for like accurate takes on the legal industry, like, no,
it's no.
Wrong.
The early 90s legal television show isn't where to go. Hot damn. Who knew?
I mean, like, everyone liked The Good Wife. And like, I tried watching The Good Wife and that was even goofier than that. Like, this at least has like a sheen of respectability. The Good Wife was like, we're all beautiful and dumb. And I was like, ugh, okay. But anyways, so I'm going to try and get through it, but we're going to, anyways. So I was trying to find like interesting things about this program. And it turns out that in later seasons of the original, not the remake, but in later seasons, they add this lady as the secretary, and her name is Allison Seeley Smith, and she was Storm from the X-Men cartoon that Kathy Disher was in. And I'm like, it's all coming together. It's all coming together with Kathy. So, and like, this is not going to be interesting to like the American audience, maybe, but like for me as a Canadian, I found it weirdly fascinating. But there's this really famous Canadian news broadcaster, and he's got to be retired by now because he's like, he's got to be in his 70s, but his name is Peter Mansbridge. He's like the Tom Brokaw. He's like the Canadian Tom Brokaw. He's like the guy. The lady who makes it with Gare in this episode, Olivia, the character is called Olivia Novak. Her real name is Cynthia, her stage name is Cynthia Dale. I don't remember what her real last name is, but Cynthia Dale is married to Peter Mansbridge. And I was like, what? You're married to like the number one news broadcaster in all of Canada. And I get to see you make it with Gare on TV. Like, like so Canadian, such a Canadian moment. And as you and I both noticed when we watched this, there's a very brief, like, two scenes with a police officer in this. And the police officer is played by Mark McKinney, Canadian icon from Kids in the Hall. And we see him later in Slings and Arrows with Gare, which is funny because, like, I don't think
it's all coming together.
Either of them, I don't think they interact with each other in either show. They're, like, in episodes together, but they're never, like, in the same scene together.
No, I don't think so.
Which makes me wonder, because we talked about on IMDb, it says that Gare is in one episode of Kids in the Hall as like a heroin dealer or something. And you and I watched that clip and like, I think that maybe it's him with his hair slicked back and you're like, that looks nothing like that man. That is definitely not him. So like, I'm wondering, like, there's like this weird overlap where they're like in things together, but they never actually interact. So like, I'm wondering, do they know each other? We can ask him when we see him in Stratford this summer against his will. But like it's weird, like it's weird that they're like always together but they're never together. Anyways, so
yeah,
young Mark McKinney also should not be slept on. A lot of very handsome men we're going to discuss this episode, one of whom obviously interests us more because this podcast is called Gare Can Get It and not Mark McKinney is super hot, but like, you know, a lot of good. This show makes up in beautiful people and nice clothing what it lacks in substance or writing quality, I feel like. So, okay. So
in actual merit, yes.
Actual merit. I'm trying to find something. Okay. So this show, like the vibe that I'm getting from the show is that it is sort of like The Good Wife, where like we care a lot about like their personal relationships with everyone, or like Grey's Anatomy. Aren't they all fucking each other on Grey's Anatomy?
Or I feel
like
it's that
kind of thing. Yes. Yeah, where it's like we're ostensibly here to discuss, like, to deal with these people in their work environment, but it's real small and real incestuous, so they're all going to have sex with each other.
Yep.
Neat. Yeah.
And get married.
And get married. That's hence the wedding. The title is being the wedding. Okay. So there are three basic plots that are going on in this episode. There's the Gare plot. There's the Guatemalan waiter trial. Okay, and then there's the wedding plot slash their personal conflicts, and like none of these is better than the. I mean, like the Gare one is the best, obviously, because of Gare. But like they're not good. We're gonna try and get through it. It's remember to wear your context lenses because this is from 1990. So like some of the stuff is a little not great. But we're gonna try.
They tried. Yeah, a lot of times these shows just didn't have the language. Like, we didn't even have the wording to talk about some of these themes. And so even when you, like, you see it, they're trying, but they're using all these the terms that we don't use anymore because they don't have the respectful language that we have. Yeah.
But you're right. They do try. They are better than I would expect, But also watching it, I was like, okay, you're trying. You're trying, but you're approaching it in a weird 90s way. Where like the language is good, but the gentleness is nice, but the actual plot is real bad and weird. But okay, so we're gonna get through this. Okay, so the lawyer wedding / personal complex plot. Okay, so two of the lawyers at this law firm are called Alana Newman and Leon Rabinovich, and they're getting married. And it's definitely her second marriage because she mentions that. For Leon, I don't know if it's his second or he's like a later in life guy.
I think it's his first. Yeah.
Okay, so this is what we mentioned earlier. His character is supposed to be 41 years old. I looked him up. I did the math. In 1990, I think the actor who plays Leon Rabinovich would have been maybe 44. So like in the same age range. When I first saw this on the computer when we were sitting watching it together, I thought he was 77. He is rough. He is so rough for his age. I feel
it's
so bad.
It's a hard 41. That's a hard 44.
I am 36 and I watched that and I was like, fuck you. Come on. Don't do that to me. I know I have gray hair. I'm going to go dye it right the fuck now because this hurts my heart that was 41 or 44, I guess, in real life. Like I saw that and I was like, ugh. And I don't know how old the actress who plays Alana is. She does not look as old as him. I think she's supposed to be sort of in the same age range, but like even if she's in her late 30s, like in 1990 late 30s looked like 42. Like it's everyone looks a lot older.
Yeah, but he's also like small. Like that's not why he's not attractive, but he's like short, which is fine. I'm not a size queen, but he's really thin. So it's like he's tiny. He's like small and really skinny, and then he's like wizened, and then he has gray hair. He looks like he should be like popping out of a tree in a fantasy thing and being like, I shall show you the way. Like normally I try to be really gracious but he's framed as like so attractive. This woman like is willing to put up with his shenanigans to have him.
I mean,
and he's the lead actor in this show.
I appreciate when any show gives us a romantic lead who is not a traditional romantic lead. Like, not to say that like Nigel Bennett is not handsome, because he is very handsome, but like
he's unconventionally handsome.
And so like the one time in Forever Night where he gets to like have a gentle makeout scene, I was like, oh, I'm really into this for reasons we don't have to go into. So like I like when they give someone unconventional like a chance of being loved, and they don't frame it as like pity fuck, which I feel like sometimes we do in more modern shows where they're like, look at her, she's fat and ugly, but someone blind found her, and you're just like, okay, like thank you.
What's that movie with Jack Black?
With Gwyneth Paltrow.
Shallow Hal.
Thank you, God.
Shallow Hal.
But I like that they like, I think you came from a good place in your heart, but also like, why is she like, why are we only worthy if there's like some version of us that can be translated into a beautiful person? Like, why can't we uggos get love? I guess is my question.
Well, I mean, also the main actor in Street Legal is not charming. Like he was very off-putting. I had a really difficult time with him. I was like, that. I'm trying so hard. I'm just not, I don't understand. And he's got like the weird 90s hair where they would grow their hair long and then they'd like comb it back but not slick it down. So it's just like they're always in a headwind. And it's just like, it's so like Nick's hair from the second half of season 3, where it was just like, Garrett, go get a haircut. But he never did. So they just like did what they could. Yeah. Which, okay. Yes, sorry.
Please do. Please. I like any episode where when I'm editing, it's not just my voice and then you being like, yep. Because then I feel like we're both having a discussion. But like, can we pause for a second to discuss Forever Night and to discuss Gare for like 12 seconds? Because Monsters, Madness, and Magic, they just released their podcast episode where they interview Gare, and we were all really excited for it. And like, I listened to it and I loved it. But it turns out that I've been saying his name wrong this whole fucking time for like 9 episodes, and I'm real bummed out about it. So apparently, Rachel, will you say it? Because you say it the right way and I'm still working on
Geraint.
It.
Geraint. He says it's Geraint. Like pear pint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anytime in an interview he uses those two words, he's like, it's like pear pint. Garite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally have been fucking it up for 9 episodes and I'm real bummed about it. So I'm
okay. We only have a podcast dedicated to him. It's
time. I know. That's why I feel like an asshole. I was like, God damn it. So mad. Anyways, I'm just going to keep calling him Sir because that's what works for me.
Or Gare. We usually say Gare. So we're good.
Yeah, but then I also feel like I felt really embarrassed when I called him Gare to his face. Like, we're not there. We're going to be there. We're not there yet.
Yeah, okay. Sure. We're not there. What will be achieving that, Meg? What standard must we meet to be able to shorten his name? Because you were like, hi, Gare. And then did the little wave.
I know. I'm still so traumatized. Doop, doop.
And then you told his fellow actors you were there to see Gare. Oh, no, I'm here for Gare.
I don't know what happened. I don't. But like in person, look, I know what happened is that I had an emotional blackout and you had one too, okay? We both had emotional blackouts together.
I know.
But in future, it will be Mr. Wynn Davies, sir.
Sure.
Until we get to a Gare place.
I don't think he'd care, honestly. I think you could call him whatever.
But like, I want to be polite and respectful in person, even if I'm wet and sweaty on the podcast. So anyways, I just.
Okay. Heard. All right. I'll back you up on this.
I just, I sense the judgment in your eyes. I felt bad. I felt bad that like this whole time I've been saying his name wrong. And then I was like, oh fuck. Okay. So anyways,
troll lawyer.
I think he's supposed to be charming. I think he's supposed to be cool because they talk about his past as like a rabble rouser when he lived in Montreal and when he was in university and he was like a protest leader. I think he's supposed to be like the cool like hippie lawyer is kind of the vibe that I get from him. I can't deny that he's an unconventional love interest and that every time he's making out with the wife like in a broom closet, I was like, oh, okay.
That'd be because he's shorter than she is.
He's like a full foot shorter than she is. And it's, you know what? Like, I'm for it. I support, I love his love.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
And he does have sort of a Keebler Elf vibe about him.
But we didn't have any other time to fall in love with him because we only watched this one episode. And it's the episode where they get together. So we didn't see any of their romance.
Would that have mattered for you?
Maybe.
It might have.
It might have.
I found him charming. I found him likable. I found him very sweet. I liked that he was getting this. It felt like a deserved relationship somehow. And like, I know I'm just basing that on this one episode, but like, it felt like I've been alone for a long time and now I get this. And she never thought she'd find love again. I never thought I would find love at all. And like, I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah.
But like to say that he's like a conventional male lead would be very wrong. Like he's different. And he made me feel bad about being 36 because he is a hard, hard 41. Hard. So anyway, so they're together. He is 112 and she has perfect like late 80s business lady hair, which is to say her hair is a giant upside down triangle, which like... I am a little sad that we don't have that hairstyle anymore, but also as a culture, it's probably good. But anyway, so it's so specifically dated. Anyways, so Elena and Leon are going to get married and they're like doing all their thing. Then there's another lawyer for their firm and her name is Olivia Novak. And she's in love with this other lawyer whose name is Chuck. I don't know what his last name is. It doesn't matter. His name is Chuck, and he looks like every other white man in this episode who is not Leanne Rabinovich, which got very confusing for me. But so Olivia is in love with Chuck. It felt like they used to be together, and they no longer are. Like, they're now antagonistic towards each other, but they still, like, she would look at him with longing, and then he would look at her with longing, and it was like, okay, are they, like, will they, won't they? But they seemed like they're just in, like, the fresh off the breakup, fuck you, but I also would like to fuck you place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So later in the episode when we have the actual wedding, Olivia shows up alone because she's like, maybe I'm going to get to hook up with Chuck. And I have thoughts about that, which we will discuss shortly. But she's like, Chuck, I want Chuck. Chuck shows up with this woman named Jennifer and they keep calling her a bimbo. And I'm like, first off, rude. Second off, if you're gonna call her a bimbo, like, at least, like, give me some, like, dress her like a bimbo, like, give her like 6 inch clear stripper heels, give her like giant blonde hair. No, she's just like a blonde lady who doesn't appear to be a lawyer, and I'm like, if that's the only reason they're calling her a bimbo, like, I know lots of bimbo lawyers, like, men and women, he bimbos and she bimbos, like, there are lots of them. So her not being a lawyer, like, that is not sufficient for me to grant her bimbo status. But I was like kind of bummed out that they like would not stop fucking saying the word bimbo.
Like, yeah, I think it's just supposed to sound judgy. Like, oh, I can't believe he left her for her.
Yeah.
She's such a bimbo. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, we don't get anything. Like, we get, like, 3 lines of dialogue from her, from Jennifer. And I just felt bad for her. Because she knows that this Chuck guy, like, would prefer somebody else. Like, she knows she's the second choice this whole episode.
Yeah.
And I was just like, God, the show, like, it hurts my heart and my eyes. Okay, so Olivia wants Chuck. Chuck has Jennifer. Alana and Leon are fucking in the coat closet. So then there's another set. There's, like, now a triangle, a love triangle at work, an additional bunch of lawyers. So there's Carrie, who is a lawyer. She's a white lady who is always has a kid named, a little girl named Kim tagging along behind her, who feels like, did you get, okay, I didn't actually look this up because I don't give a shit, but, like, she's, like, a little kid, so you would think that it was, like, her daughter, but there's, like, a vibe of, like, I just adopted you, you're my kid's sister, like, my friend left town in a hurry, and I had to, like, take care of her kid. Did you get that vibe at all, or am I crazy?
Yeah, it felt kind of like maybe she was divorced, and she had the child, and she didn't spend a lot of time with the child, and now she was spending more time with it, so maybe it was hers, but she didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, there's definitely, like, some sort of a distance there, like, that felt different from, like, I'm the mom, this is my kid, and she's always around.
Yeah.
So there's Carrie with some child who's tagging along with her that I guess we're fine with. She's into this other lawyer at the firm. His name is Dylan. All I have from him is that he is black, and he's a lawyer, and he gives Carrie a bunch of, like, children's books for Kim that are all about, like, women with jobs, and he's like, here's all this feminist stuff, and I'm like, thank you for the feminist Yay. Children's books, but, like, also, like, you said the word feminist, like, so heavily that it felt a little like, here's the bullshit that you're into, and I was like, ugh, because the book was literally like I'm a lady and I have a job, and I'm like, okay, all right, thank you for this, but, like, you're acting like it's, like, crazy, like feminazi propaganda for just a book that's like I'm a mom and sometimes I work. And I was like, okay. But anyways, he and Carrie are dating, but uh-oh, this guy named Nick, who is a cop, because all cops in the 90s were named Nick, I guess. White cop Nick is into Carrie. And, like, the way that he expresses this is by being a fucking bastard the entire episode. Like, he's into her in, like, a weird caveman, I'm going to beat the shit out of you and drag you with your hair kind of way, which was upsetting.
Yeah.
And what's upsetting is that cop Nick and lawyer Chuck look like the same fucking person. It took me 2 times watching it to be like, wait, aren't you with, because they both are just, like, giant white guys with big rectangle heads. And I was like, I literally halfway through, I was like, am I getting face blindness? Like, I know that's a thing that happens if you get dementia sometimes. I was like, do I have dementia now? Like, what is? But no, they're just white guys in the early 90s and they all look the same. So that's their cross to bear. So they all have this, like, weird mullet hair that, like, I don't like, you know, that thing where it's, like, not quite a mullet, but, like, it aspires to grow into a mullet. It's, like, just a little bit too long. It's just errands. So, like, Carrie is with Dylan and Nick wants to be with her. And then, like, at some point, Nick punches Dylan square in the fucking face. And it's just like, oh, like, I want her and you have her, like, pow, right in the fucking face. Dylan falls over and then just stoically, like, gets up and is like, I guess that's a thing I have to deal with. And I was like, is this because it's 1990 and you're black and you're not allowed to show anger on television? Or ...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just felt so weird. Like, is there some... I can't think of any context that would make this make sense other than I'm black and it's 1990 and, like, my character can't show anger, which I don't know. Am I reading into it too much? She asked the other white co-host.
No, I mean... This is one of those ones where we're, like, too far removed. It's 30 years old, 34 years old. We're too far removed to be able to see it the way that somebody viewing it in 1990 would have seen it.
Yeah. And I wish I knew what that would have, like, what, like, if it's 1990 and you watch this on television, does it make sense to you because of this particular show, like the Dylan, Nick, Carrie dynamic? Does it make right. sense to you because of the 90s? Like, does it not make sense to you? So, okay. So there's the Alana and Leon couple. There's the Olivia and Chuck used to be couple. There's the Carrie, Dylan, Nick love triangle, all at this tiny little law firm, which is like, don't shit where you eat. That's, and especially in a tiny law firm, like that just sounds awful. But anyways, so we have all their personal conflicts. And then additionally, so we've got Alana's parents are the bride. Her parents are coming in from Alberta. And for whatever reason, they're like, well, we're going to just come in on a train. And I'm like, you took a train from Alberta all the way to Ontario? Like, was it like a 4-day train journey? Like, okay, whatever. Fine. See the sights, I guess. You don't want to be there on time for your kid's wedding. Sure. So they're coming in on the train. And they expect to be met at the train station by Leon, who they have never met before, which I was like, okay, that's okay. So they're like, we've never met him before. They don't know what he looks like, but they know that he is from Montreal. And you can be from Montreal and not be French Canadian. Like you can be, you're either an Anglophone or you're a Francophone. Like you're like, they're different cultures, but like you could be from the same place is the short explanation of it. So yeah. He is an Anglophone from Montreal. So the entire time that we see Alana's parents, they will not fucking shut up about how much they hate the Québécois, the Francophones. They will not fucking shut up about it. It gets played sort of for laughs, like, because they're like, oh, thank God you're not, they don't say Quebecois. I think they say that you're
it's
not.
It's like, haha, they're racist.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But yeah. It's like, but it is played for laughs. It's one of those things where like, you know, like there's like racism that we don't get to make fun of. And then there's like stuff that's like on the border that it's TV shows sometimes. Yeah. Like, no, this is fine. We can make fun of this. And like, it's all cool. That's
like rednecks, like making fun of yes. Southern. Yeah. Rednecks. Yes.
So like, yeah. That's where it comes from. So like, that's kind of the vibe. So then when the parents finally meet Leon, they're like, oh, like, we're so happy that you're not like one of them. He does a fake Quebecois accent. Like when Celine Dion talks.
Yeah.
She's from Quebec. So when she speaks English, like that is sort of a Quebecois accent. So he like does that, but he like ramps it all the way up to 11. And I was like, oh, it feels like a hate crime. Oh, I don't like watching this. I don't like just, oh, I don't like it. So
I didn't have the same visceral reaction that you had. I mean, I get it, but yeah, it's probably the same way I feel when people do a Southern accent.
I just like, I grew up with so much of the, like hearing people make fun of the Quebecois accent, and I haven't heard people make fun of it for a long time because, like, obviously it does not come up in America very often.
Not often.
So, hearing the anti-Quebecois sentiment, and then, like, right after it, him being like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I really sounded like this? Like,
well, probably more accurate would be when people do the Southern accent because they're dumb. Like, oh, yes. I don't get it. I'm really slow. Like the...
Well, yeah, that's... Yeah, so it just... I don't know. I was like, it's been a while since I heard this. My skin's crawling. So all of it was terrible. They have a bachelorette party for the women and they go to a fucking pool hall and I guess they're all pool sharks. And I was like, okay. And then the guys have their bachelor party at like... generic restaurant, and I was like, seriously, like, okay. So they have they're at like just some generic restaurant reminiscing about when they used to be young activists, and for whatever reason that translates into them getting drunk, going up to like a sailing ship, like a big ship in the harbor, climbing yeah. it and like spray painting shit on it, and that's where they get caught by Mark McKinney the cop. And I was like, the fuck, even okay,
this, you know, they're like, we're all lawyers.
Yeah. I
You're like, not we're going to get out. It's fine. You don't even need to arrest us. We're all lawyers. And he's like, yeah, I still have to take you in. I'm really sorry. You're defacing property right now.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, I'm going to choose my words very carefully and say that the least true part of that scene was the cop taking them in. And it was therefore the part of that scene that I appreciated the most. And I'm just going to...
Leave it at
I'm
that?
I'm just going to leave it at that, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have had a storied legal career. I myself have never defaced a steamship, so I'm just going to Anyways, so all the characters are trying to fuck each other, and they're all real weird, and it's 1990, which is to say it's all very 80s, and it's a lot, and I feel like the Leon character is charming, but like all the other characters either have no personality or they're just weird and they're too much and I don't like them. So, okay. So, while we're like preparing for the wedding, so the episode starts with the characters all at like some restaurant. There is a woman sitting at this restaurant who is dressed exactly like Carmen Sandiego. She has a giant Carmen Sandiego hat with a huge brim, and she's wearing a red trench coat that is like lipstick red. Like she is, you would notice her in the sea of brown suited people like anywhere. She stands the fuck out. So they're at this restaurant. When the episode starts, they're talking about like their plans for the wedding and like, I have to do this, you have to do that, whatever. And then their waiter is a guy that they all know. He's from Guatemala. They're all friends with him. And then, all of a sudden the manager comes over and he accuses the waiter of stealing from the till. And he's like, no, it was like the fucking Carmen Sandiego bitch. She's the one. I saw her at the till. She took the money. And like, somehow nobody else notices her. This bitch stands out. Like you didn't really. She's like a 4-foot-tall Asian woman in the world's biggest hat. Like are you fucking, okay.
Bright red.
So they're like, we don't know what you're talking about. So like, because this is the fakest show, the trial of the waiter is like the next day. And I was like, are you fucking, like, not like 6 months later, like the very next day we're in court all of a sudden and Leon has to be the one that represents the Guatemalan waiter. And I'm like, so you're getting married today. Yesterday, Carmen Sandiego stole from the till, and today you're defending the waiter so he doesn't get deported, who's being accused of the crime that Carmen Sandiego committed. And I was like, oh, okay, I hate all of you, but whatever. So, they're doing their trial instead of preparing for the wedding. And then like at some point they're like, we might even have to like cancel the honeymoon. We might have to like move shit around. And some of the other lawyers are like, can you let us just take over? And I'm like, first off, why is this happening so quickly? But like, second off, yeah, why does it have to be your dumbass that's doing it? You clearly only need like 12 hours apparently to prepare for an entire trial, which no, wrong, but okay, fine, you only need like 12 hours, like let Carrie or let one of the other people do it, like why not? And he's like, no, it's my job. And I'm like, okay, I liked you, Leon. You were like cute and fun, even though you're homely and a lot, but like, I don't understand what this is. So I literally in my notes, I was like, it's less stupid than The Good Wife, but like not by a lot, not by very much at all. So anyway, so like they're doing the trial while preparing for the wedding. On the way to the wedding, Elena and Leon are in the limousine together driving to their wedding, and they see this Carmen Sandiego bitch and she's still dressed like Carmen Sandiego. And I'm like, this is your everywhere outfit? This wasn't just like a special occasion at the one restaurant in town where you just feel like fancying it up?
You own that red coat. You wear that everywhere.
With the giant hat. Like, I cannot emphasize enough that she is like a 4-foot-tall Filipino woman with a 6-foot-wide hat. Like, I just can't. So they're like, driver, stop the car. And he's like, aren't we going to the wedding? And they're like, we have important legal things to get a hold of. And I was like, okay. So they chase her into her apartment building. And I'm like, this is how you get murdered on your wedding day. First off, that's how that happens. This is how you die. So they chase her into her apartment building. She pops the door open and they find out that she's a trans woman, which I don't think they even have a name for that at that point. Like, they don't call her anything, which, you know what, like, was a good choice for 1990. Like, don't try and put your 1990 word. She is, for a modern audience, you would say she is a trans woman and leave it at that. But anyways, so she steals the money from the till to fund her gender confirmation surgery. But I was like, wait a second, because she stole, like, what was in the till, like, from that day. I have to imagine that the surgery is more than like $50 and a coupon for a free sandwich. So I was like,
you hope so. You sincerely hope so.
Maybe she's going to see the same doctors that we saw in Republic of Doyle, who are just funding shit out of the back of their van.
And one of them's actually impersonating a dead doctor. Yeah, probably. Oh my God. That sounds fair.
Oh, we found the crossover. So she's like, yeah, I need to fund my surgery. So I just figured I would steal from the till and nobody would be hurt. And I was like, really? You just, okay. So, they're all weirdly fine with it. She's like, well, you've caught me. I guess I will not get my surgery today. I will give myself up and I will go to prison. And I was like, Okay, well, I guess you had to wrap it up, so, okay.
But on...
Done. Donezo.
Done.
So she... this makes no goddamn sense. So they, she's like, I will turn myself in. And they're like, yes, okay, good. So she does turn herself in. And the cops are like, okay, releasing you on your own recognizance. And I'm like, but you were going to deport the guy for stealing the money 12 seconds ago. Like, but she just... We're good?
We're good.
We're good. We don't even... Okay.
Hey, Pam. All right. You can leave.
I get... This is... I would argue that this is... Perhaps going too far the other way. Like, she's, I respect her gender identity, but also she's a criminal and she's dressed like Carmen Sandiego, so she could flee at any moment and you never know where she's going to go. So, like,
where in the world?
Where, right?
Like, she have gone.
So, anyways, they're like, they let Samantha / Carmen Sandiego, they like let her go. And what does she do? She shows up to the wedding. She like, first off, she shows up in a very nice dress. So she like got home clearly, changed into her I'm going to a fancy wedding outfit, shows up with a big box and she gives it to Alana and she goes, this is something that I was going to wear at my own wedding. And I'm like, okay, why is everyone, and it's like clearly lingerie, like clearly it's lingerie. It's not like a dress. It's not like a wedding dress. So I'm like, So between this and Forever Night, we have two separate moments of people just thinking it's okay to like randomly gift lingerie in the 90s. And I'm like, I get that we were all beating each other's faces in. I get that we were all using like insensitive language and being racist as hell. Like, I'm aware of all those things. Like, I sort of culturally understand that we were all just fucking worse in 1990. Like, I get it. Why were we all giving each other lingerie? Because I don't, it doesn't fit into the we were, I mean, it sort of fits into the we were all worse
never narrative. Do that.
Why? Especially never. Like to a stranger and like the, and like, come on, the line of like, I wanted this for me, you have it. I'm like, that's worse than giving Natalie the like pity fuck lingerie on her 30th birthday in Forever Night. Like that's insensitive, but like, I get that they're like, we hope that Nick Knight fucks you at some point. Maybe if you have a pretty little bustier, maybe that'll, that'll cinch the deal for you. But here's the lingerie that I was going to wear when I could have maybe had somebody, but I'm never going to have anyone. And I'm also going to prison. Here you go. I'm just like, there's so much to unpack there.
Yeah.
There's so much. Just don't buy people lingerie. You will know if you're in the situation where you should. You'll know. If you have anything to question, you're not there. You're not there yet. Like, I just... So she is, I guess, going to go to prison later. And the waiter who was just about to be deported, they let him out to work the wedding. And so then Leon is like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're fine. And I'm like, that's not how any of this works. But like, okay, all right, sure, whatever.
Fine.
You're all terrible. Okay.
To the good plot. So then
we get to the actual good plot, which is like, it's not actually that exciting, but like, it is so... It is a perfect Gare performance that, like, I can't be mad at it. So, Gare plays Anthony Davis. He is a film director being sued by a stuntman who got injured on the set of a movie that Gare was directing. So, apparently, they were filming some kind of a dream sequence about Vietnam, and the stuntman is supposed to, like, run through a field, and there's, like, a bunch of, like, mortar shells that are going off, like, next to him while he's running to simulate, like, he's being shot at. And one of the shells goes off too close to his head, and he loses his hearing in one ear, like, forever. So we first meet Gare, and he sort of seems like kind of a stubborn prick. Like, Olivia is trying to explain to him, like, you're being sued for this guy's injuries, for, like, in tort for this guy's injuries. There's a pretty good chance that we're going to lose because he's going to be a very sympathetic victim. Like, he can't hear out of one ear now. Like, he's never going to be able to be a stuntman ever again. Like, he's lost his whole career. He's going to be really sympathetic. Like, we should just make a deal and go. And Gare's like, I know that I'm right. And it's not my fault that he lost his hearing. And fuck that guy. He's actually just not a very good stuntman. And it, like, he's just not good at his job. And that's not my fault that you're not good at your job. Like, I am going to fight. And, like, at least in my personal and admittedly limited experience with clients, that attitude makes me want to blow my fucking brains out. Like, when you're like, there's a good chance that you're going to lose. And you're going to lose... by a lot more money than you would if we settled. And they're like, fuck you, I'm right, morally. And you're like, morally is not going to pay your bill at the end of this. And you're going to be paying for my time too. So like, I'm just telling you, like, this is not a good choice. But so my response to that is, you fucking asshole. Her response to that is to get really hot. Did you notice that? He's like, I want to fight. And she's like, oh yeah, you want to fight? Like, yeah. Ooh. And I was like, okay.
Harder, daddy.
She's like, oh. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
I will say, like, one of the few redeeming things about this episode is even though it's 1990 and most of the hair is awful and the fashion is terrible, it was at least sort of in the same vein as, like, modern legal TV shows where I feel like the budget for clothing is a little bit higher than, like, for a similar TV show that's not with lawyers. And I feel like for this whole episode, they used the money on the bride's truly insane bedazzled wedding dress with tiara and veil. And for Gare, because they dress him so well in this episode. He's got his little mushroom haircut, and I'm like, okay, good. Not like wild and crazy Gare hair.
Correct.
Like,
all right.
They throw a tailored top coat on him, and I'm like, oh, wool top coat. Yes, good. Just so long and so tight. And then they put him in two separate, not at the same time, which is rare for him, two separate, very nice quality looking, like really brightly colored dress shirts, and are never nude. Unbuttons the first two buttons, and I was like, oh my god, are we getting Gare chest? We never get Gare chest. No wonder Olivia's creaming her pants. She's like, oh my god, almost a clavicle.
I can't handle the beauty. I think I saw a chest.
So I was like, okay, like, you're really into it. He's very handsome. He seems charming, but also like stubborn and sort of a prick, and like, I don't know at the end of this, like, if I believe that he's not to blame. But we'll get there in a second. So,
yeah. I was going to say, I think what we're supposed to get is this guy lied. The guy who got injured lied about his experience as a stuntman. So they were expecting him to be able to handle this stunt.
Yes, okay. So there is language. There is, they have that conversation where he's like, yeah, this guy, like, oh, when he's on the stand, Olivia asks the guy, oh, so like you just made up shit on your resume. And it, because in the past you had only really done like small falling down stunts. And this was like a technically difficult thing where there are going to be mortars going off and you had to like know exactly where to step. And like, it was a lot different than what you've done in the past. So you lied. And he's like, yes, I lied. But then Gere's character makes a comment where he goes, I was throwing this guy a bone by giving him this job. He hadn't worked in a couple of years and I knew he was unqualified. And I'm like, are you saying now that, like, you knew he was unqualified? Like, now you know he's unqualified and you were just throwing him a bone because he hadn't worked in a while? Or were you throwing him a bone because he hadn't worked in a while and you knew he was bullshitting on his resume and you were, like, gonna get him for cheaper than, like, an actually qualified guy? I don't know. Some of the language, I think we're meant to take from it that, like, he lied and then Gare used him and now Gare's like, okay, you lied and now it's my fault that you fucked up. I think that's probably how we're supposed to take it. But some of the comments that he makes where he's like, I was throwing him a bone. I was like, so.
I think he says something like, I was trusting him to be able to tell me when he didn't know how to do a thing. And he didn't tell me he didn't know how to do the thing.
He might have said that, too. I mean, that would like put it into more context. But it seemed interesting to me that, like, I don't know, like at the end of it, like I didn't personally feel satisfied that Gare had done nothing wrong in hiring the guy. Like, it felt like...
Yeah, it feels a little skeezy.
It feels a little skeezy. So Gare's lawyer, Olivia, is like, look, we're only gonna settle if you're the one that pays all the money and then you accept all liability and you indemnify Gare totally. And the guy from ImageWorks is like, I'm real mad about it, but like, I know that we're going to lose more money if we don't. So I guess to deal with stubborn Gare on the one side and the guy who only can hear out of one ear on the other side, I guess we're going to have to just get fucked by everybody. Fine, whatever. And he calls Gare's character and Olivia, he calls them both sharks. He's like, oh, I hope you're both happy, you stupid sharks. Like, meh. And then he like stomps off. And I'm like, okay, like, good legal dealing with you, whatever. So at this point, this is where it becomes a true Gare performance. This is, like, the only redeeming part of this whole fucking episode. Because the second that this other guy is like, yes, I take the deal. And so I guess, like, you know, like, there's still paperwork to fill out. But I guess in some sense, at this point, the case is now settled, sort of. I mean, like, not technically, but, you know, conceptually. At this point, Gare turns to Olivia and goes, I want to take you up for dinner. Oh shit, wait, don't you have a wedding tonight? I want to take you out to the wedding. Like, in like one breath. Dinner? Wait, wedding? And I was like, yes. Good. No notes. It went straight from you're my lawyer and I'm going to be sort of a prick because we're going to have like client lawyer, like hard talk, to you are no longer my lawyer. You're a human female within 50 feet of me. Let's get it on. And I was like, yes, now we have the reason for you in this episode. Like thumbs up. No notes. I love it. So she's like, this is where she's like, I am going to the wedding tonight. You are Geraint Wyn-Davies. Look, I said it right. Yay. You are Geraint Wyn-Davies, and I do want to fuck you because I'm a human woman, and that's how this game is played. However, I, for whatever reason, am super into Chuck, and I want to go to the wedding to, like, I think I'm going to shoot my shot with Chuck at the wedding. And I was like, okay, we discussed this a little bit. I'm sorry. We discussed this a whole fucking lot in Republic of Doyle, where there's someone who has the chance to be with Gare and she picks the ugliest, homeliest, freakiest, whateverest guy. And I'm like, you couldn't, like, there's, like, really? Really? Like, whatever, like, Chuck has on you. Like, first off, you guys seem to have an antagonistic relationship. Second off, I guess you don't know this at this point, but, like, he's already moved on to be with Bimbo Jennifer. But, like, third off, like, fucking what? Like, what? Like, you had gear. You had young 90s gear with, like, the top coat and the mushroom cut and the unbuttoned
shirt.
He
undid a button for you.
Two buttons.
Two buttons.
Yeah. He went full on. That doesn't happen
every day.
Yeah. You got full on, like, milky white chest sex machine. And you were like, no, I want the guy with the rectangle head and the proto mullet. Fucking no. No, you make bad choices. You don't deserve joy. Why? Why did you pick square, like rectangle headband? Why did you pick him? Like he's just, and he seems like a douche the whole episode.
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be a douchebag, and yet she's still pursuing him. One of those, I just love him. I don't know what to do about it. And everyone's like, yeah, you do. Stop trying to date him.
Right? Maybe she's only into jerks because like the Gare character is sort of a jerk when she first meets him. I don't know. Maybe that's her pro. She's, I know that, so when Street Legal gets brought back in 2019, she's, Olivia is like the only character that comes back as like a main character. Like I think some of them like pop in as like cameos and stuff, but she's like,
yeah,
she's like the main one. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know that I want to watch you again because you make poor choices. Like I didn't want to watch because it's like a legal show and it's going to be goofy and painful and shit, but like, you make the wrong choice. You had a very clear choice and you were like, zoop, no. So anyways, so the last thing that she says to Gare, to his character before she goes to the wedding is like, I am going to try to shoot my shot with fucking rectangle head Frankenstein monster man. And that's my choice. Sorry. So Gare's like, I respect it. I understand that. Like, see you later. So she goes to the wedding. She's wearing a really cute, I hope this style comes back now that all the 90s styles are coming back, dress, which is to say it's a little black dress with like insane gold poofy sleeves. And I think that we've established that I'm into a poofy sleeve. So like when so she's got her little golden sleeve poofs. She shows up at the wedding. Apparently, not only is she a lawyer, but she's like a fucking lounge singer in her spare time. So like, I know some lawyers who like, have like, I'm going to play my guitar at the local casino Saturday nights, like those gigs. But she is like professional Broadway quality. And in fact, this actress has been on Broadway. She's professional Broadway quality, like lounge singer. And I was like, sure, that makes as much sense as fucking anything else. Why not? So she gets up there and she sings a torch song as Leon and Alana, as like their first dance. She sings a torch song to Chuck. And I was like, okay. All right. She sings, what is it? I Didn't Want to Love You, which I think is the name of the song, while staring directly into Chuck's eyes as he dances with tiny Jennifer, who is like a full on foot shorter than him. So when he's turning around, he's just staring directly at Olivia. And I was like, well, that's uncomfortable. While Jennifer like is like dancing there like, I know I'm not your choice, but I guess I'll dance. And I was like, oh, this is okay. This is. So So Olivia like sings her Please Fuck Me song. Chuck does not give into it. Olivia is sad and then she gets a drink spilled on her and she's like, fuck it. Like my night is over. I'm done. Gare, I guess, has Gare sense. He just like senses that horniness is happening and that there's like a woman who is not getting it right now.
Yes. I feel like Toronto might actually have like a bat signal, but like for Gare. Yes, Commissioner Gordon. Is there a woman that needs me? There's so many women that need your tonight care. It's just a raised eyebrow.
He just feels a twinge. He just feels like a twinge in his pants. And he's like, there is a woman who is sexually unfulfilled within 50 miles. I must go. And he like does like this little Forever Night like leap, right? So, yeah. So he shows up at the wedding. He's walking in the building. He sees Chuck and Jennifer. And like, even though Chuck and Jennifer like do not want to be there together, they're making out in the hallway because I guess you're going to get your pity fuck whenever. So Garrett's like, oh, hey, like, am I in the right place? Like, are you, like, is this the wedding of whatever? And Chuck is like, yeah, and I'm the best man. And somehow he knows. I don't think that that Olivia ever told the Garrett character, oh, the guy I'm pining after is the best man. But like somehow, I don't know, again, magic dick sense. He just knows. He knows that this is the one that Olivia wants and that he's not for her. So he's like, all right, psh, whatever, dude. So he walks into the wedding. He crashes the wedding. He sees Olivia, who is like covered in white wine and pissed off and about to leave. And he's like, sup. And I was like, oh, yes, correct. Good job. Good job. Boop, he shows up. Chuck. I sense a woman who needs me. So he shows up. He's wearing, again, like the sexy fucking structured top coat. And I was like, thank God. So he shows up. He takes off his top coat and he's like, hey, best man. And he like tosses it at Chuck.
Behind him, like tosses it over his shoulder, like, hold my fucking coat. That's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Take my coat, you fucking incel bitch. I'm going to sleep with your woman. And I was like, yay. Yay, finally. So he goes out. He, like, not only just goes to, like, to dance with Olivia, he does, like, a patented Gare spider hand, sexy kiss on the cheek, look back at Chuck, fuck you, dude, off to the dance floor. And I was like, no notes. Just perfect. You've done that in everything we've ever seen you in. Please continue to do that in everything we ever will see you in. Just give us the Gare performance that we want. Even though you're only in this episode for like 30 seconds and you might be responsible for a man going deaf, I don't care. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, like, it's good fine. For you.
So the episode ends with everyone like standing outside the synagogue, and the wedding couple comes out and they're all like throwing the rice and shit, whatever. And they Gare is outside with Olivia, like they're standing together. We end the episode with them seeming like, oh, okay, like, are you gonna, you know, like, is something gonna happen here? Like, is this gonna be like you're gonna date him for a little bit before winding up with Chuck or whoever you wind up with? No. He never shows up again in any other future episode. I don't know if they, like, address it at all verbally the next episode. Like, oh, he had to go back to his home planet.
Just gone.
Yeah, just totally disappears. And I was like, oh, street legal. Like, you just wasted. Like, you literally had him swoop in knight in shining armor to sweep her off her feet at a wedding. So romantic. Looking so handsome with her in her beautiful little, like, 1990 dress and her little sexy bob cut. Like, this could have been something. This could have been great. He's the guy that makes Chuck jealous. Like, make this happen. Give me, like, 10 episodes of this. Fucking no! No, we get TV series blueballed. He gets one, like, makeout scene in a synagogue and then nothing. And I was like, damn you, street legal, I will never watch you again. Even though, like, I already was not going to watch because you seem real dumb and also legal stuff makes my palms sweat. But, like, I would have.
But Gare would have gotten me there. I would have done it for Gare.
He would have gotten me there. I would have watched every dumb fucking bullshit fake law, nobody has been to a courtroom ever, legal bullshit. I would have watched all of it joyfully. I would have paid real money, real Canadian dollars to watch this show, which apparently, until like 2015, this was the longest running 1 hour scripted program in Canadian television history. This was like a big fucking deal, street legal. I would have watched all 3 billion episodes if you'd given me some more gear, but you didn't. You're dead to me, street legal.
Wow.
You're dead. This thing lasted eight seasons, and then they bring it back in 2019 for one season, which they're now calling season 9 because it didn't get renewed after that. So to make it less sad, they just like sweep it into the first series, kind of. But yeah, this thing was like a big fucking deal. I don't know. I know I locked myself into rating things for like the whole episode. So like if I'm rating out of 10 for the whole episode, I don't know. I gave Diamonds, what, like a 4.5. I gave Republic of Doyle, like a 4 or 5 or whatever. I don't know, like a 3.
Ooh.
Well, no, maybe a four. Maybe a four, just because Gear coming in at the end and whipping a coat at somebody was so satisfying.
That was really satisfying.
And I really did enjoy him being like, okay, you're not my lawyer. Do you want to go out to dinner? Oh, wait, you're at a wedding. Do you want to go to the wedding? Like, I liked him being like, bam, 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 bam. Like,
I'll be your plus one. Yeah.
So, I don't know, four, I guess. It's like a bare knuckle, like fingernails gripping onto the edge of the four, about to fall into a three. That's where I fall. So, okay. I'm sorry. What did you give?
I'm going to go 3.5 raised eyebrows out of five. I'm going to introduce the half raised eyebrow. because he definitely moves through every scene that he's in this with his usual, like, the casual confidence of the man who knows the only thing standing between him and fucking these women is asking them out on a date.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Like, the very first scene that we have of him, which I wanted to discuss earlier, and like, I forgot, I blacked out, was like the inverse of that infamous scene, or infamous to me, I guess, scene from the scavenger hunt episode. I guess the first part of scavenger hunt of Littlest Hobo, where it's like Gare and a lady. And then like, there's the proto boyfriend, the like used to be boyfriend in the middle being like, oh shit. So the first time we see Gare in this, we have Olivia and Chuck on the left and right of the screen. And we have Gare in the middle as like very clearly like, I am going to be in the middle of all of this. And like the look on his face says, I know why you have blocked me here. That is correct. I am the dick. Hello. Here I am.
Yes.
I came here to be sued and to fuck, and I'm all done being sued. And I was like, okay. Oh, but I missed the best part. I forgot the best part. So when he shows up at the wedding, he's like, hey, Jaws. And I was like, oh, you got a callback? You got a little callback to the whole, like, little shark thing? Oh, you little sharks together, aren't you? It's like, it's real fucking dumb. It's real dumb. This whole thing is real dumb. But, like, him being there, I mean, like, hey, remember that moment we had, like, 12 minutes ago when you thought you didn't want to fuck me? Like,
yeah.
Okay, so.
Psych, here we are. You did. You did. You always knew you did. All I had to do was ask you out. That's why he's like, let's go out to dinner. Oh, there's a wedding tonight? It's cool. I'll go with you. I'll be your date.
Give in to your true nature.
And she's like, yes, maybe. She makes the wrong choice. We've established that.
Well, and to be fair, I have not seen the remake. Like, I think that if I remember correctly, the remake, or the, I guess, season 9, because they're calling it season 9 now, I have heard that they spend that whole season dealing with the opioid crisis. Like, there's, I think the law firm that she's part of, yeah, that's the right face to make. They the law firm that she becomes part of a new law firm in the new series. It's not the same one that she was part of before. And they, I think they're suing a pharmaceutical company, is kind of what I got from Wikipedia. And the characters, the lawyers who are at this new firm with Olivia, it sounds like they're all more diverse. So, like, more ethnically diverse and more culturally diverse, and there's, like, different points of view. So I'm like, maybe with an overarching case through the whole season, and with characters who have different points of view, instead of, like, the white guy and the slightly different white guy and then the slightly fatter white guy. Like, maybe those things together, and the fact that it was made in 2019, like, maybe that would make it, like, a good show. I would try the new show. I would give it a shot, just because, like, it sounds like it could be something interesting. And, like, Cynthia Dale is not a bad actress. Like, you know, I liked her. I mean, she seemed fine. But, like, the first series just seemed so fucking aggressively dumb and soap opery that, like, I would feel like pulling my own fingernails out if I had to watch that again.
That's fair.
Like, nothing against the acting. Like, it was better acting. The acting was fine.
It was just the content. It was the content of the story.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, except for Gare. Like, obviously.
The Gare content was good. The Gare content is always good. Thumbs up for that. And thumbs up, credit where credit is due, for how they treated the trans character. I mean, I don't know why they dressed her like Carmen Sandiego, but like otherwise they treated her with respect and dignity. And like for that in 1990, maybe I should give it an extra sloppy wet kiss for that, just as like a merit point. Because that was good. They could have done that. Much, much worse.
Yeah, so, that, like, could have gone real, real bad. And it didn't go real bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just boring. How do you make Carmen Sandiego stealing from a till for gender confirmation surgery boring? Like, that's... It's like Republic of Doyle. It's like Republic of Doyle. Like, I have a guy making drugs out of the back of his van. And, like, you made that boring. Like, how the fuck... Anyways, come on, modern Canadian TV. I am rooting for you, but you're not giving me a lot to work with here. So now, next week, we're going to go back to, like, the 80s, the early 80s, for Ikwe, where Gary's going to have a Scottish accent and be walking around in a river and be real fucking racist. So, like, get ready for that. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be so much.
I'm so excited.
I'm not looking for... Like, I'm going to have to rewatch it to, like, make some notes on it, and, like, I'm not... He does a good job in it. Like, it's like everything else. Like, he does a good job, and I'm excited to see his part. But, like, it's an educational film. And, like, it is... It goes real hard, is I guess all I'm going to say. It goes real hard.
We're going to get to introduce the characteristic bad wigs and random accent.
Oh, yeah, you don't even... Oh, he's Scottish. There's like, at least one. Oh, God. Like, it's going to be really... But he's good at accents. He's good at accents, or like, yeah. He does a good job, but like, it is like real, it is a lot.
It's probably the stage version of the accent.
Oh yeah, no, he wants you to hear it up in the balcony, and you do. You do. It is, oh God, I'm not looking forward to that. Anyways, tune in next week for us trying to handle early 80s educational films trying to handle Native Americans with sympathy and grace. So.
Until next time, friends.
Bye. Oh, don't tell them that we exist. Remember,
don't be a narc. Don't tell them we exist. Bye. Bye.